Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the House Education and Finance Conference Committee.
Rough night.
I'd love to announce that we have targets and we're ready to button up a bill, but we're not there yet, so we are I know, you're all surprised. So we are still waiting, and those discussions and that are continuing on. But Senator Wieger and I have had some good discussions about provisions in the bill and just having some dialogue in that. But I wanted to do a couple of things today. One is to see if we could try to adopt some of the same or similar provisions in the bill, and I'm not sure we'll be able to do that, but we'll see if that may be possible, just to try to move things along and for the sake of the staff that we'll have to put together the bill. If we could get some of that process going now, it would relieve a little of the last-minute burden, so that is would be the purpose in trying to do that. And the second is I'm going to take just a couple of bits of testimony. There has been, I think, some question or lack of clarity, perhaps, on the governor's universal four-year-old pre-K program and kind of what the school district's positions are on that. So I wanted to have an opportunity for representatives of the school districts, MSBA and AMSD, come forward and just provide us with their thoughts so they can do it themselves and it's not through someone else and that. So I think why don't we go ahead and start with that. And so if a representative from AMSD and from MSBA could come forward. Welcome, and please just state for your name for the record. And again, just if you would want to, I know that you all have sent letters to the committees explaining your priorities with a number of items that will be discussed as part of the entire bill and that. If you want to reference some of those things as well, that's fine. But the purpose of this is just if you could offer some clarity on kind of what your members and the school districts. Where they're at on the concept of universal pre-K at our public schools. So with that, Ms. Kelleher, are you going to lead off?
I would be happy to lead off, Madam
Thank you.
Chair. Members, it is great to see you all together in one place. I was really hoping you'd be bringing something bigger than this to the table. And I want to thank you for your service. Being on a conference committee this time of year is really difficult, and trying to advocate for kids going forward isn't easy, mostly when you're sleep deprived and trying to put together the best language you can. So I want to thank you for giving up your time to do this for the students of Minnesota. There has been an ongoing discussion. The governor, in his original speech, had a vision about a four-year-old program, universal across the state. I got the feeling it would feel a lot like kindergarten, only better because it would be four-year-olds. So that really challenged us to sit back and evaluate how that would play out in school districts. So once we got the language, we started to visit with superintendents and board members from around the state to see how they felt about this issue going forward. And our feedback from them was a pretty clear message that they felt, at least in the language the governor provided originally, would be somewhat onerous for them to provide. And in the same light, they highlighted something we've known for a long time, that school readiness and ECFE are two programs that really work for four-year-olds. I had a board member from Farmington email me, and she said, we've got 50% of the four-year-olds in Farmington enrolled in ECFE and school readiness. Please give us some time to figure out how we'd even bring in all the rest of the children into the program. So I think board members feel passionately as sort of our starter team is the four-year-old population, and how do we get them acclimated to K-12. So they were concerned about the operational issues, and I know you asked for a letter from our association on this. There are some operational issues with the governor's plan we've been concerned about. they would require that a four-year-old would be in school longer than a senior in high school, and that's a lot of time for a four-year-old. So that concerned us. Oftentimes thinking about our food service program would have to go onto the summer. Custodial help would have to be there. These are all parts of the contracts that aren't even imagined or negotiated with our staff about how to provide it. Parent participation requirements, and it wasn't clear if the parents didn't want to participate, how did that impact the child. Developing with community-based early learning providers, I think the governor envisioned the public school would be a catalyst, and we would sort of feed the other four-year-old programs in our area. And the problem is that is not a role we have ever done before. Part of the bill would require fiscal and programmatic evaluation, staff development for all, not only our staff, but everyone else. And last but not least, it would require that these early childhood licensed teachers be given the same type of salary a full-fledged K-12 teacher is. And those are very sort of at the heart of the structure we build locally with our staff. And we really felt that, and superintendents as well as board members were worried about what would happen. And the idea that even if you didn't want to participate in this voluntary program, you would lose your school readiness program. And I don't know if you guys remember, I think if someone was actually doing a count of how many times I said school readiness is a game changer for kids. Superintendents call it their number one program. I think I'd be up to 10 or 12 by now. But I really want to reinforce it. If your heart and mind is tied toward doing something for the four-year-old population, we've got the boots on the ground in every single school district to do this. Give us the money, and we can be the game changer that all of us want. So with that, Madam Chairman, I would be happy to answer questions, and I appreciate an opportunity to sort of talk about our vision for four-year-olds.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Just very quickly, you mentioned something, and I want to make sure I was clarified. Do you think going to a full-fledged universal program would expand or contract the early childhood family education programs that typically happen in the evenings?
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative Crescia. As we read the governor's original proposal, we had a hearing on it in the Senate, and we mentioned this during our testimony there, that it takes the $16 million from school readiness and puts it into this voluntary pre-K four-year-old program. So if you were a school district who decided this program's too much for me, I want to see somebody else out what it looks like, you would lose your school readiness program. And that's not a situation I think districts want to be in. So it was very problematic to start with, just with the loss of a program we thought we were doing really well.
Representative Crescia.
And thank you. Thank you for that. I want to try to be as clear as I can. One of the benefits when I first started teaching, and when we first had kids, was as busy as my schedule was, the early childhood family education program. The ability that I could go with other parents in the evening and sit with my kids, sit with other parents. My question is, and anybody that comes up, if we were to do that, I believe we will minimize that. I believe it'll be more convenient to put the kids in the school during the day, and therefore will seriously set aside that parent time. And I don't know if we have an answer for that, but I think we need to really think hard about how valuable that time is with those new parents who, quite honestly, don't know what they're doing because it's very hard. And we're all learning as we go. And to be able to be next to somebody that's my age or a little bit older and they can pass on sage wisdom as I'm watching my kids go through stages is absolutely critical. And if we lose that by dropping our kids off at school in the morning and coming back later just to see how they've done and not to participate, that worries me. So I don't know that you have an answer, but I have a history with this, and I just would hate to lose that for other parents.
Representative Crescia.
Ms. Crescia, or Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was an ECFE parent, too. I know that feeling being around other parents, and I was fortunate enough to be in a school district who had a very strong program that way. And I think it really serves a useful function for parents who don't know their way and need to have sort of the skinny on where is the best place to buy diapers and how do I get books and where do I go to get their hearing checked. So I don't think you can discount it. I think that's the kind of discussion we need to have thinking about this going forward. So I want to be very clear. The idea of reaching out to four-year-olds is something every board member embraces. We are concerned operationally how we would be able to do this under the governor's plan, and that was it was almost all over universal concern over these issues going forward. So it was helpful. Senator Wieger had a hearing on this, and we sort of ran through all these concerns there. And I have to believe, Senator Wieger, when you put in additional money for ECFE and school readiness, that as a former board member, you understand the power of those programs locally for kids. So I want to thank you for that position.
Well, ma'am, Chair, I'll disclose, I was the founder of our ECFE program and had five kids that went through it, and I know the parental involvement and how important that is. It's in statute as well.
Any other questions? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Keller, for your input. I'm just curious, we had quite a lengthy discussion about scholarships. How do you see that scholarship dollars fitting into the overall picture of how we address our needs of our four-year-olds?
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Senator Dahl. That's a very good question. I'm fortunate enough to represent public school board members, and we really believe we provide a good public educational system. And I think you need to invest in that. And it's one of the few things the Constitution reminds you is your responsibility to keep this going forward. I don't believe the Constitution assures everyone a choice of a scholarship. That's a legislative decision going forward. I think we could really make a huge difference with that kind of investment in your public school programs, and you start to make it a real game changer for kids. So we understand that some children just don't do well in public school, and I respect that. We have a lot of homeschool kids and private school children, but I think if you want the best bang for your buck, giving us into public schools with this kind of initiative and vision, we could do great things.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Mr. You know, I appreciate, your information, the operational considerations, the length of time that four-year-olds will be in the school, the custodial contracts, the parents who might not want their children at four to go in to school yet. And, this is a real, real game-changing thing for us. We're having, I've got a handout. I don't really know where it came from, but there are going to be almost 75,000 four-year-olds that would be eligible for this program if we went 100%. Well, now the Senate didn't really do that, and we brought in some of the choices and stuff like that. But remember, our population is also becoming more poor. The children that are coming into in school, we're going to see increased percentages of children coming from homes that are very, very low income. And that is something we have to work on, because they will be our future workforce. In 20 years, we will be asking them to be the workers of the world. And they have to be ready. I commend the governor for bringing this out for us. It's again, what a leader should be doing, probably stretching it a little bit. And in those schools that are taking in a lot of four-year-olds right now, which there are, they know that it's beneficial. They're showing a closing of the achievement gap, which is what we all want. So, if we could have everything, if there was a... if there was a willingness, I shouldn't say we have the money to do it, but if there was the willingness to do it, I would say we should do it. But, you know, I'd like your comments about how you're going to help to close that achievement gap in a better way than has been put forward by our governor.
Ms. Kelleher.
Madam Chairman, I believe wholeheartedly, and I think all my members do, that the best thing we can do for a child in the state of Minnesota is give them an education, a stellar education. And for targeted children, early childhood is pivotal to getting rid of that academic gap that goes forward. I think, you know, it's almost like early childhood for many years was like dusted under the table, and every once in a while we take it out of the Capitol and look at it, and I'm going to go back and under the table. And the good thing that this has started is we are all talking about scholarships, ECFE, school readiness, and they're not at the back of the bus. They're at the very front of the bus. And, you know, just getting along anymore isn't good enough. And I think it's clear from the scholarships as well as from the governor's universal program that they're demanding there be some internal commitment to really ratcheting it up. And Senator Johnson, I believe the best thing you can do is give us some money statewide. We're up, rolling, we're in place, and see what we can do. Let's come back in a year and take an evaluation. Let's come back in 2 years and look at where we want to go. And you can retool. I mean, this rests in your laps, this huge decision for all the kids in Minnesota. But I go back to it is the best thing. Providing them a good education is the best thing we can do to any child in Minnesota, and we're committed to doing that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the questions that has come up repeatedly, I think, is if you did have a full-fledged all-day pre-K program, what would the school districts do for facilities? And I see Commissioner Caselius is here. I'm wondering if we could get the governor's perspective on how they would address that.
Yes, I think that is a good question. And so how about why don't we let Mr. Kronquist testify, and then we'll turn to the commissioner to answer that question.
Okay.
Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I did bring along a handout that if I'll share with you. I think many of you actually already have it, but I brought along just in case. And I'm really not going to share anything that we haven't been talking to you about since January. This was on our agenda, on our legislative platform. Early learning is highly important. You all know the data, so I'm not going to repeat that about how effective it is in closing the achievement gap. Our board recognizes that, and they came to the conclusion that the best way to get there is through the existing school readiness program. We think we have incredibly effective programs that are already in place. But as you all know, that the program was established in 1992, and has the first time it actually received an increase was last year. So with continued investments in that program, you would allow your locally elected school boards to design and establish the program that works best for them, for their students, for their parents, allows them to implement it as there's the demand, as they have the classroom space, as they have the licensed staff available. And to make that transition, you all know we're coming off just to having implemented full-day kindergarten, and that has stretched your school districts really to the max in terms of staffing, in terms of facility space. And so we, as Senator Johnson pointed out, we commend the governor for the vision that he put out there. We think it's something we need to aspire to. Universal pre-K is a bold vision. Again, we give the governor credit for it, but we think the way to get there is use the existing school readiness program. So I'll stop there, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Mr. Kronquist, just one question for you, and then just for clarification's sake, on the school readiness program and the schools operating that now currently, they are able to target, if you will, maybe students that most need that, that boost or that experience to get ready for kindergarten, and then offer... They can offer, you know, it with, you know, more of a scholarship tuition or a sliding fee. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, and right now the program really is designed to target, the most at risk or the students that are not likely to be prepared for kindergarten. But again, you could use that existing program and expand it to serve a greater number of three and four-year-olds.
Thank you. Commissioner, thank you. Thanks for being here. And I don't know, Senator Stump, do you want to repeat your question since we had Mr. Kernquist kind of in the interim?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, one of the issues that has come up a number of different times has been relating to facilities, school facilities, and how school districts would kind of address that facilities issue. Is there adequate facilities? Do they need time? Exactly kind of what does the governor see when that becomes an issue?
Commissioner Casselius.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, thank you for the question. With facilities, we have set aside in the governor's proposal for $11.4 million in lease aid. We also take care of charter schools with $3.5 million for charter school lease aid, and $9.4 million would be available for operating capital. That's a total of about $24 million for the proposed 47,000 kids, which is about $510 per pupil for school districts to use to accommodate for facilities. And so I just wanted to be sure that members knew that that additional funding was in there for facilities if they should need it. Also, if school districts are able to use their mixed delivery system, they're able to use the dollars. We haven't talked much about this provision within the governor's proposal, that school districts get the money and they get the entire linked categorical funding that comes with a pre-K child, just as if it was a ninth grade student or if the child was an eighth grade student. So they would get all of the funding that comes with that to be able to provide additional services like transportation, facilities, English language learner services, services for special education, nutrition services. They would get services in counseling and support services that are around for children. Those pre-K students would also qualify for Title I funding, so they would get all the Title I funding. They would get the compensatory ed funding, career tech ed levy funding. They would get the QCOMP funding. That's $269 per kid. So all of the funding that goes with a pre-K student is the same funding that would come. Earlier they said it would be more hours. In our original proposal, was no more than 5 hours. So they would not be in school longer than a senior or a junior. So our original proposal was no more than 5 hours for the pre-K students. I also wanted to just address ECFE question. I also, Representative Kreisha, value ECFE. It was supported by Senator Wieger last session. And we know that because of the transferability of the funds currently in law to move from ECFE to school readiness, we've seen about one-third of our districts do this. So we are actually concerned that ECFE will go away if we don't have universal four-year-old pre-K. Because what will happen is they will raid the ECFE pot and create pre-K. I have a chart, if you'd like to see it, of the number of schools that have pre-K and the number of whole districts that have pre-K, so that you can see that already we have 276 public school-based preschools. So for school districts not to say that they're interested in universal pre-K, we sure have a lot of them already doing pre-K, either half day for 1 or 2 days a week, all day 1 or 2 days a week. The difference is in the quality. And the difference is whether you have a licensed teacher or not. ECFE requires a licensed teacher. School readiness does not. There is a big difference in quality between the two programs. It also requires that you have the school readiness does not require any specific days. It also, our proposal would not require fees. If you may have seen the NEAR report recently that showed that Minnesota was ranked last for access to state-funded pre-K, and also that we were ranked third highest in child care costs. Minnesotans can pay up to $13,000 a year for child care costs. And for many of our school readiness programs, because they get so little and they're not linked to any of the other formula categoricals, the kids don't get the same kind of supports. And what happens is that parents are just paying larger fees for that service. And so I want to remind members that having pre-K is an important step in closing the achievement gap. In 2011, the secretary visited Minnesota. And what he told the business partnership at that time was that Minnesota lacked urgency around closing the achievement gap. I know all members, you want to close the achievement gap. I know in your hearts you want to do better. We have a $2 billion surplus. And the secretary just 2 weeks ago said, let's not squander that opportunity to do something better. So it really comes down to, do we want to get, I don't think anyone argues that every kid needs a high quality early childhood education. None of us argue that. And we don't have scarce times. We have a $2 billion surplus. The questions that's coming down on the table is, do we want to provide 47,000 kids an opportunity to a high quality early education, or don't we? That's the bottom line question. 47,000 kids. Even if we take a scholarship approach and put 30 million in, we're going to get 3,000 kids over the biennium with the House proposal. 3,000. We can impact 47,000. Now, members, please tell me, does 47,000 kids close the gap, or does 3,000? I have a number of studies that show that it's good for everybody. I just want to give you one more thing, and I'll be quiet about our results. If you could give this to them, Adosh, please. Anyone who thinks that we're there yet for any of our kids, black and brown kids, white kids, affluent kids, poor kids, we are not. I want to show you our results on our MCA tests. We have 252 districts in 2014 in math that did not meet their gap closure for white kids. 22 not for Asian, 27 not for American Indian, 47 districts missing the target for black kids, but 252 missing the target for white kids. In 2014, districts on track for closing the achievement gap in reading, 25 not for meeting it for Indian kids, 258 not making it for white kids. We still have 43% of our high school kids, white kids, not meeting proficiency in math. So middle class kids, white kids, kids who are stuck in the achievement gap, who are poor and minority, all need your commitment to investments this year. The governor has already said he wants a 2% increase. He said that publicly this week. And he just wants to have every kid have a strong early learning education. I appreciate all of you for all that you do for our kids every day. And I thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the commissioner? Representative Crescia?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick clarification. The 47,000 numbers we all have, is that the total number of four-year-olds or is that the total number of unserved four-year-olds?
It will be 57,000. I think Senator Johnson had her numbers backwards of 75,000. It's 57,000 students within 3 years will be served. We have 80% that we're predicting will do UPK the first year. We have 92% the second year and 96% the third year. This is just for four-year-olds.
Representative Crescia.
So just so so let's say the number is 57,000. Is that the total number, or is that the number of students that are unserved at this point?
57,000 is the total number at 96% of them.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Crescia.
Of those 57,000, how many of them are currently being served now by whether it's home-based or other programs?
We have about 28,000 students in schools being served. You can see it in the sheet. Being served that are either in some kind of ECFE, half day, 1 or 2 days a week. We have about 28,000, I believe, in our school readiness programs.
Representative Christian.
So just two more questions. So the number is really not 57,000. It's a subset of that that are not being served.
Commissioner.
Well, if you look at the 28,000 where parents are paying fees to go to school, or they may be going half day for just 1 day a week, what we are trying to propose is the high quality that we know will lead to kindergarten readiness, the 10 indicators that our federal standards and all the researchers use that present to us what is high quality. So anything less than 5 days a week, half day, Arthur Reynolds, for instance, I was on a panel last week, presented a special study that he's been doing in Chicago and in St. Paul Public Schools. What he has found is when students are in half day pre-K, they come kindergarten ready, 62% of them come kindergarten ready. When they are in all day, 81% of them come ready for kindergarten. That's brand new, that Arthur Reynolds research, and I think we have that as well we can give to you.
Representative Krisha.
And I understand all that data. I too looked at it. My question is this, and I think it's just important for us to get our arms around this. And you're right, our hearts are all in the same place, but there's a subset of children that are coming to school ready, that are there. Those are not the children that we should be targeting. I want to make sure if we're really making achievement gap strides that we're reaching the children that need it the most. It's important to know of the 57,000, there is a subset of those. I don't know what percentage that are coming to school ready. I think we have to acknowledge that. True or false?
Commissioner.
Well, absolutely. There are students who don't come ready, but you can't predict that by income necessarily or by race. I mean, there are kids of color that come ready. There are wealthy kids that don't come ready. And matter of fact, I think it's 60% of middle-class kids actually come ready for kindergarten. So I would like to remind the members and Representative Krisha that we have 40% poverty already in our schools. And when you look at the math results in high school, still we have 43% of white students not meeting the target. And so my argument is let's get 47,000 kids ready for kindergarten where they will have the best chance to be successful and have a really great education. I think we also should understand completely that middle-class kids can be missed who have special education, who have other types of disabilities if they don't have a good, high-quality preschool experience. And so this way we can reach the most amount of kids. And the Tulsa study shows that even middle-class affluent families benefit about 10 months to their peers who are middle-class with an advantage. And so we know that poor families advantage more, but the study out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is the largest state study, also shows that middle-class families also benefit. And so I think that's the case for universal.
Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Consilius. And I think this is where the gap is. I think what you're saying is we can't identify those kids. I actually believe we can. If you go to the DHS, we have 19,000 reports of children that receive a knock on the door. One of the fallacies that I think, and MinLink from the University of Minnesota has a great report on this, that any child that receives that is in poverty or also receives a child welfare report has the highest risk of not achieving the achievement gap. We know these kids. Unfortunately, we know them.
Right.
And to say that we don't know them, I think we have to step back. I can tell you right now, I know four kids in the system that are just fine, and they're mine.
Yeah.
Because I have a wonderful mother and wife that's staying home with them. And I think we have to acknowledge that. And we're on the same page here. My question is this. Let's get to the kids that need it first. There are kids that are coming to school ready. There are kids that could benefit from this. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid we're leaving that kid behind once again that we're not acknowledging really needs this. One other follow-up question. Would Head Start go away then under this?
Commissioner.
It doesn't seem like we need it anymore if everyone's going to school.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, one, we wouldn't leave anybody behind in a universal. Everybody would be able to come who's four, and we would be able to target with Head Start. So Head Start wouldn't go away because Head Start does way more than just provide preschool. They actually provide parenting and other family supports to the family because, you know, these are our poorest children and families. And so Head Start would not go away, and I'll fight just as hard for Head Start. UPK was what I was brought up for, so that's why I was talking about that. But I'm just as strong an advocate for Head Start. Many of you know I was a Head Start baby myself. So what we want to be able to talk about, or what we've been talking about with UPK, is universal for everybody. It's sort of like a tiered intervention. You've all heard about that before, right? So you provide the universal for everybody because everybody benefits from universal. Mm-hmm. For a more targeted, you provide scholarships and you provide Head Start for more targeted. So it's a false choice. And if we were sitting here and we didn't have a $2 billion surplus, Representative Kreisha, I would absolutely be targeting to our poorest kids, our minority kids, and where we think the gap is. That's why I'm fighting for our Indian education proposal, too. But because we have a $2 billion surplus, no matter how we structure universal pre-K, as long as it's universal and every kid has the opportunity and we provide that first layer of prevention for everybody, I think that's going to help us raise our scores for everybody and not have an artificial gap closure where our white students, for instance, are doing worse and the other kids are catching up, and now all we can say we have smaller gaps. What we're trying to do is raise everybody's boat while raising the boats of our minority and poor kids even faster.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, what data do you collect on four-year-olds, particularly the difference between the boys and the girls as they progress through a preschool such as that which you're describing? Because I've read your readiness report, and I'm concerned about the boys especially, and the fact that my kindergarten teachers tell me they're not even ready in kindergarten, really, to sit still, that their developmental days are better served in play and in learning executive function and having a chance to mature. I have a four-year-old grandson. I know he's not ready to sit in a classroom for 5 hours a day. So would you comment on what data you've collected in regard to the difference? Because in your readiness report of 2012, it seems to me that girls exceed boys by 1.5% in getting to 75% proficiency on some of the standards that you've set. So what data are you collecting, and how do you argue that four-year-old boys then are really ready for this? And if it's universal, they'll be placed there instead of being allowed to have their parents make a decision based on their developmental readiness.
Commissioner.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I just want to reiterate that it is optional for parents. So if they feel that their child's not mature enough or they would like to delay, they have the full authority to do that. Matter of fact, Minnesota does not even require kindergarten until seven years old. So compulsory attendance comes in play at age seven. So we wouldn't have to make any parent do that. Again, because we are doing a mixed delivery system of supporting scholarships, supporting Head Start, supporting our schools, supporting school readiness, all of those things, you know, would be different options for a parent to choose if they didn't want to choose a four-year-old program. I don't know how many of you have been in our school-based four-year-old programs, but there's a whole lot of play going on, a whole lot of hugging going on, a whole lot of singing going on and jumping up and down. So it's not, you know, what we might think is happening in a regular, you know, second or third grade classroom. We have a strong value at the department with play-based education. There's actually a national trend going on around play-based education. Finland is even looking at play-based education. And so we have a year to plan and train our teachers, and that's what we intend to do around what's appropriate and not appropriate for four-year-olds.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I agree. I've seen some of the public school programs. They are very effective. You made a comment, universal means access for everybody. And I've got several questions, Madam Chair. Do you believe the parent aware is effective at identifying high quality programs?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, we just, I used to think Parent Aware was high quality and a high quality program. Recently, I sat on the panel with Arthur Reynolds, and he was looking at our Parent Aware program, and he actually has been studying doing the St. Paul quality indicators against the federal requirements that we have. And I think I might have those 10 federal requirements here of high quality and the research showing getting ready for kindergarten, and then a study in Chicago. So he's doing a study. And what he said at that panel was that really schools are delivering 6- and 7-star programs. And our Parent Aware system was a 4-star program and not as high quality as what's being delivered in the schools, at least the ones that he's studying. And so what I talked to Bobby about was looking at how would we rate schools then on quality, because we wouldn't want to have something where we were telling parents that it's high quality. And so we have work to do, I think, with our Parent Aware high quality standards, because they don't meet the federal definition of what they consider high quality and what the research is using to define high quality.
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Casillas, but would you concede that there are private programs, and I guess my definition of high quality is they're producing students who are kindergarten ready?
Yes.
Not some arbitrary checklist, but we've got students that are ready to learn when they walk in the door. Would you concede there are private programs that are effective?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, absolutely. My son went to a church-based program at one point, and so, yes, there are absolutely high-quality programs out there, and some that maybe aren't even in our Parent Aware rating system, and so that's why we continue to support scholarships and child care providers through CCAP funding and others, because we believe that parents should have many choices. And it brings me to a really good point. As part of our Race to the Top grant was to be able to develop what's called a kindergarten evaluation assessment. And so these assessments are in the process now, and they're not your normal assessments that kind of shut down on us today. These are just observational assessments that teachers would use and providers would use to look at whether kids were kindergarten ready. We have built into our proposal those assessments so that we could have better information for the legislature and other policymakers looking at what is quality in Minnesota, what would we say, how would we change things to be able to evaluate quality. So that work is in process right now and part of our proposal.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, does every child have the same needs? Would every child benefit from a universal program, one that is the same for everybody versus one that might meet the specific needs of a student?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I believe every child would benefit from a universal pre-K, similar to how I believe ninth grade, if you do really team-based environments and you have good counseling ratios for ninth graders, that a successful ninth grade year launches you into a successful high school career and you end up graduating more successfully. So I believe early learning, four-year-old programs, are value to every single child. They learn not only just academically, but also socially, emotionally, and they learn how to work with peers, and they're in integrated environments, and they are able to learn norms and all of the wonderful things that go with being ready for school.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry to hog the mic here. Commissioner, I'm not debating whether or not there's benefit to having early learning. The question was, does every child have the same needs and would benefit equally from a universal same for every child program versus trying to tailor a program or allow a parent to meet specific needs of a student?
Yeah. Commissioner. Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I can't say again how much we are, one, it's optional to come into these programs. Two, we have multiple programs that we're investing in and building out quality throughout the entire state, so parents have choices. Minnesota has valued open choice, and so this essentially does not deny anybody but provides for a public option for parents to use. And absolutely every child does not have exactly the same needs, and I think this is one of the wonderful things of the way that we've structured our proposal, is that you could go to Head Start, you could get CCAP funding, you could get a tax relief if you don't want to do that through the governor's tax proposal. You could do scholarship if you qualified for that, or you could send your child to four-year-old pre-K within a school. So there are a lot of different options for parents to choose.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But those options already exist. The difference is that you're effectively funding it for every student, and you're making it, you're giving it effectively a competitive advantage over those effective programs that are already running in our communities, that are owned by our neighbors, that are producing high quality, ready for kindergarten students, and yet drawing resources away. I appreciate the governor said that he'd support 2%, but the budget you brought us was a 1% increase on the formula. And so I haven't seen that he's necessarily revised his budget to say how he'll account for the 2% increase on the per pupil funding. But when we talk about the achievement gap, we've got early learning, but we've also got class size that needs to be addressed that we've been failing to talk about for the last 25 years. I think it was you that brought the Senate the information that at least over the last decade, and I believe it's even longer, we failed to keep up with inflation on a per pupil formula. And so to say that this is the silver bullet, I think, troubles me when we've got so many needs around class size and curriculum and making sure that we do have the support in place. And so how do you address the concerns of Mr. Rolnick, who says we would be better off targeting our support and aid to those students who most need it? And how do you address to those high-quality preschools that you're, you know, effectively you're going to have a competitive advantage that puts them out of business?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, one, and Senator Pratt, I think that Art Rolnick says that you want to get to every child having a really strong early learning program and experience. So I don't think I'm at odds with what Art is saying. Art is saying when you have limited resources, then you should target. Because in my belief, we have the opportunity here to do something transformative with a $2 billion surplus and to prioritize our future by investing in our kids. I believe that we have the opportunity to give this to every single child and make it available to every child and family. And yes, it is public funding of a four-year-old program to save young families who have huge college costs, who have mortgages to pay, who have cars to pay. I meet these people all the time, and they say, I can't afford child care. Minnesota has the third highest child care in the nation, up to $13,000 a year for one. I've had a number of young girls say, I'm delaying having children and delaying my family because I can't afford child care. And so this will help our young families. And I believe because we open the scholarships up 0 to 5, we will compensate the market for those four-year-olds by allowing those scholarship children to go into 0 to 5. But what we have to do is get more of the child care providers participating in our Parent Aware program.
One last question, Senator Pratt.
Well, more of a comment. I'll close it out with a couple of comments. Commissioner, I think we agree. Access is the issue, and that's why I co-sponsored the scholarship bill in the Senate, because I do want to make sure that the kids that are having problems getting access to quality programs are able to do it. And I also agree with Mr. Rolnick that we should probably, because I do believe we have limited resources, And therefore, we do need to be selective in how we prioritize, how we utilize those resources. And I am concerned that the governor is proposing utilizing the surplus, which we can't count on from biennium to biennium, to help fund an ongoing entitlement, an ongoing program that's going to require increased funding each biennium after that. And so those are the concerns I have with the program.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you again, Commissioner. I think I don't disagree with anything you've said today. I think what we're all concerned with around the table here is the 4 days that we have left and not really knowing our target. If we had the entire $1.9 billion surplus as a target, then we would be done a couple weeks ago, and it would be his legacy. And I actually hope that universal pre-K is his legacy. To get to my question, to try to see a way out of this in the next 4 days, is there any thought of the voluntary halftime universal pre-K and or a phase-in, which would maybe address some of our budget issues in regard to too much too fast, give schools a little breathing room as well. So maybe just that address that a little bit.
Commissioner.
Well, I obviously we're in the cone of silence around the negotiation table and what's happening there, and I know that they're working really hard on trying to get you the target so that you can do the good work of for our kids. But I can tell you what he's said publicly. So you know our universal pre-K program was $343 million, and you know that he's now said the 2%, and that's $350 million for 2%. He then and no one else would get anything else at the table. So I think you can assume that there is room, and he has always said this also publicly, that he's willing to invest in all three pots and that he is looking at a comprehensive package and that he is willing to look at everything on the table. But his number one priority is universal pre-K for everyone, ensuring that every child, every four-year-old has access. Now, how we structure that, I think he would be open to, but he is absolutely committed to universal pre-K. And he has put on the table 2% as well. I mean, that's all public information.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you look at Greater Minnesota, the delivery system of the scholarships is quite spotty. I can see where the all day or the all day pre-K program would have a you know, a delivery system that would get out very uniformly across all of Greater Minnesota and make it available for a larger group than the way the scholarships have been set up. Now, I know there's some good scholarship programs out there, but for whatever reason, they haven't multiplied, you know, like this certainly would if this became law. So I'm just wondering, is this a solution for that addresses the needs out in Greater Minnesota?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, I do think it's a solution out in Greater Minnesota because there are public schools across all this entire state. We have 375 school districts or 325 school districts. We have 100 and I think it's now 154 charter schools out in our state. All of them would be eligible for this funding in order to have pre-K programs. Many of them, like I shared with you earlier, already do have pre-K programs. So this would be an expansion and provide them additional resources available. I shared with you the $510 per pupil for these pre-K students for lease aid and operating capital. They'd also be able to have all of the compensatory funding, QComp funding, all of those other things follow these pre-K students. What I handed out to you now was the participation in Parent Aware, and really if you just put your attention onto the map, you can see, and because the charts give you all of the percents, you can see the percent of pickup, and this is from a recent DHS report. So out in rural Minnesota, if you look at the light blue of 3 and 4 star rated programs, you can see that in Cook County, for instance, there's 0% of programs rated. Lake County, 0%. Lake of the Woods, 0%. Kittison, 0%. There are no programs that are Parent Aware rated currently in those areas, or single digits Parent Aware rated 3 and 4. If you're even more lenient and you bring down quality and you say, okay, if you've agreed to just participate in the program, or if you're 1 or 2 rated, that's the chart on the very back that says 1, 2, 3, or 4 star rated. You can still see Cook County was 0, Lake County was 0, Kittison was 0. The light pink areas show you where there is very little or very pickup. Now, the Parent Aware folks will say this is because the scholarship is at $5,000 and there's not enough incentive to have people go into the program. We could raise that higher, like the House bill says, but for $30 million at $10,000, we would get 3,000 more kids over the biennium. So that's 1,500 kids a year compared to 47,000 a year. So I'm just saying, and then there is also an 8% administrative fee that we pay to administer the scholarships. So for every $100 million you put into scholarships, you have to put in $8 million for administration to pay for overhead of processing applications and fees. So then that's less scholarships that go out to kids. Also, we should note that not only are these rural areas they don't have any Parent Aware programs, but if they did, let's say that Kittison picked up and they had more programs and they started getting at 8% or 10% of the providers being Parent Aware rated. That would be a good thing, but because it's such a broad, large geographical area, there's no transportation that comes with the scholarships. So they wouldn't be given, parents don't have any help with that to get them there. But there's a local public school. And just a reminder, it's an option for parents to go to your local public school. It's an option for public schools to partner with their local child care providers and provide the service at a New Horizon, at a church, with Head Start. They have full flexibility at the local to be able to take the dollars and contract for educational services for their pre-K kids.
I just wanted to say thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I've got two others on the list, and then I know I've got additional testifiers, so I think I'll let this be the last two questions for the commissioner if we could then move on. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, and thank you very much. I do know the position you're in, and I appreciate the passion. I'm just going to offer this out. I know it's at 4 days left, and we're looking for compromises. I think the agreement is that we need to address school readiness, and I will just throw this out that perhaps the governor would move off his position of being program specific of universal preschool, and let's say perhaps the governor would consider 150 in scholarships at the 2%, and then the money left over we go to deferred maintenance to give us time to get into the rural areas and allow us to build out a program. It's something that I would throw out, and I think it accomplishes some of the constraints we have in schools that are worried about their facilities, but it also allows us to grow it out into the scholarship area where we know we have, and you've mentioned it, Head Start, it's already rated. We've got CSCAP and scholarships. So I think there's a lot there that we could consider if we were to, as the governor's already demonstrated, he's moved on the formula, would he also perhaps move on the scholarship and then give us the ability to have flexibility with deferred maintenance. I think there's a lot that could happen there. But I don't know where the governor is. Perhaps you can pierce the cone of silence, but it'd be something I would throw out.
Not coming from me, Representative Grecia.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kreska and Commissioner. This is a suggestion that I have not heard at all, but I'd like to offer it. And say, what about having a pilot program and, you know, put out a certain amount of money and let the schools that are ready for it and need it, particularly if they don't have, you know, parent-aware and high-quality child care, that would be a very likelihood that these schools would want to have that program, and those that feel that they're being cared for the way they desire, that they wouldn't have to do it. So we could take a certain amount of money, and we have a history of doing some of that. There are some schools that have advantages over others right now in terms of QComp and facilities, so forth. So it isn't something that we haven't done before. So it could be, it seems to me that those schools that are ready will get that many thousands into a good program, and those when they get ready, then we can start funding all of them.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I like your idea, and I think we should consider it. I think that by the evidence I gave you, we have 275 districts that are ready. So they're doing some sort of pre-K right now, and I think we'd have a really hard time managing who would get it first. And it also makes it a lot dependent, you know, similar to our American Indian Education Revenue, right, our Success for the Future program. We had it as a competitive program, but it was really dependent on whether the adults were able to write a good grant and whether they could win out the day. And so 32 lucky districts got the grant, and then 138 didn't, or 100, you have to minus the 138 minus the, you know, the 138 we're proposing in our minus, so like 106 didn't get the grant who would have been eligible. That just doesn't seem fair somehow to me, to kids. And those kids who are in Cass Lake County need it just as much as those who are in Hennepin County or any other county. And it shouldn't be dependent on whether an adult can write a good application or not. And I think it would put rural districts at a disadvantage, because many times rural districts don't have fancy grant writers, you know, to spend the thousands of dollars it costs for a grant writer to put in a competitive application. So that just makes it more inequitable too. So I think it's, you know, it's a fairness issue too.
Madam Chair, Senator, if I might, you know, Commissioner, I have a lot of faith in you. And I think there could be ways that you would get those four-year-olds into the classrooms. Those schools that can handle it and want it would be the ones who would be getting it. Mm-hmm. And that would take care. Then they don't have any problems dealing with it. So appreciate your consideration.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, did you have a question for the commissioner?
Yes.
Because I wanted to move on to the next
question. Thank you. This will be quick. You know, Commissioner, I think before we go down the path of universal, you know, to me, it's too fast, too soon. You have not collected data on the 275 four-year-old programs, as I understand from your earlier comments. We have a teacher shortage. We're going to need licensed teachers in these classrooms. Really what we need for many of our families is parenting, the ECFE program, or other ways to address how the parents are able to raise up their children in some of these situations that exist, we know, throughout society. And so I would caution us in making this big move this year, based on some of what I've said and from the reports that I've read from across the nation, that really we need to take a closer look and go a little more slowly before we jump into something that is so enormous a move for our state. We've just barely begun universal kindergarten So let's wait. And if we're not tracking these children who are already in these 275 programs to see how they're doing in second grade, third grade, you know, I don't know how long some of them have existed, but is it really paying off? Is the cost benefit there? Or are we, again, going too fast, too soon, and ignoring the ability for our small daycares and our centers to nurture the children and work with the parents? So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I think now we will thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you,
we
Madam
appreciate
Chair, members.
Thanks for your time and for being here. Ms. Heldon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Nancy Heldon, and I'm just wanting to respond a little bit to Senator Stump's question. So I thought it was important to point out to the committee that this concern about the rural communities is really important, but I think it's also important for you to keep in mind that Parent Aware only rolled out in rural Minnesota this January. This January. We're not 4 months into it. So to be concerned that it is spotty in its uptake when it's only been 4 months moving out is a little bit kind of judging before we actually know how we can do. But on top of that, I would like to point out that both White Earth and Itasca County have done full-blown race to the top, fully flexible federal scholarships for years now, and it is working. If you look at that same chart that you've had handed out, you'll see that one of the counties where the largest quality increase for and participation by providers actually is Itasca County. And so when we actually put these resources into those communities, it works. And I think the beautiful thing, too, about what is happening in Itasca and White Earth is you do see the communities coming together, the schools coming together with the provider community and the philanthropic community and the United Ways. So it actually, we have examples of models of how it is actually working very well in rural Minnesota. I just don't want to have anybody left with the idea that parent-aware quality is actually something that is at issue here. It's really a timing question. So that's, I just wanted to make clear that that was something that the committee considered.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I just want to also address what Ms. Heldon just said about quality, where we did just roll it out to five new counties this year. And we absolutely have successful programs in the Race to the Top program in Itasca County, White Earth. We hold them harmless in our proposal, so we want to continue that. And as you know, we also have investments in NAS Promise Neighborhood and SPPN Promise Neighborhood in our proposals. We believe that this transformation zone is why the MELF program works so well. We believe, and it's had 8 years to get where it's at. That's why I want to be smart about how we roll up the scholarships. We are fully supportive, and the governor has talked about being fully supportive of scholarships, expanding them birth to three, with the research saying that you need to have them earlier and targeted as well. But we want to be responsible about how we roll out this program, similar to how MELF rolled out their program. They took time, over 8 years, to do so, and that's what we want to do, to be able to support that rolling out. And so that's why we're bringing this recommendation to you today. So we hold those harmless. I believe in the transformation model. We are supporting SPPN and Promise Neighborhood, Itasca, White Earth, and holding them harmless, and even making further investments in our SPPN and NAS. So I just wanted to clarify that and make sure people knew that we were supporting that as well. Thank you.
All right. I had a couple of other testifiers. Gary Amoroso is here, and also Karen Cadigan.
If she's here.
Mr. Amoroso, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just want to share a few thoughts. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We represent the superintendents in the state as well as other district-level officials, school district officials. I know, Madam Chair, you'd like us just to stick to the one topic, but as a statewide organization, when we look at the budget, we have to look at the whole picture. And our platform this year, we were very clear that we had four major funding priorities, one being the formula, which I think everybody's heard me talk about that for 5 months, And we did have as one of our four items, expand funding for school-based early childhood programming. And so I want to make it perfectly clear that the superintendents of the state and other district-level officials that we represent support early childhood programming, support the expansion of that. The challenge comes in, what does that look like? What does it cost? Where are we at in terms of being able to implement in a timely fashion? What's our capacity? And all we can deal with is what we know and what we hear. And so as the session has progressed, we've been keeping track of all of the various conversations. And earlier on in the session, our association talked, as I believe a number of associations talked about, the concept of looking at school readiness, and because the program's in place, using dollars to expand that. We fully support the governor's vision of having all four-year-olds being provided with an early childhood experience. We all support the vision of four-year-olds being provided that experience. What that looks like, I think, is dependent upon the type of resources that are available. And that's where our challenge comes in. And so it's been made clear to me by our officers and our board of directors that because of the way the session has been playing out, because of what we've been hearing from the various parties, because of the targets that you've received, that the formula remains our number one priority. And this is only my fourth year up here, but I find it interesting that with a $2 billion surplus, we're talking as though 2% is satisfactory. That, to me, is a challenge to accept. And our members, our association, has been advocating for 3% on the formula each year. With a large target, the governor put a large target out of almost $700 million. We believe with that target, we could have a 3% increase on the formula each year. We could address early childhood education in some way, shape, manner, or form. We could address facilities, which I know is very important to many of you. We could address TD&E. We could address a number of issues and put a bill together that would truly have a significant impact on the children of this state. And so while I cannot sit here today and say that we endorse the governor's plan, we appreciate the direction he wants to take us, and I understand the cone of silence. And what makes the cone of silence challenging for associations like ours is that because we don't know what's happening now, we can't react. We can't provide the feedback. And so we, our association, needs to maintain the position we had based on what we know. And so we understand there's 4 days left. I'm hoping that however this turns out this year, Madam Chair and members, that the concept of focusing on our early childhood population continues to be a focus. But I also need to remind all of us that we have 850,000 children in K-12, they must also be a focus this year. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Any questions for Mr. Amoroso? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cadigan, welcome. And I know you're here. I know you run early childhood programs at Bloomington Public Schools. Is that correct?
I am part of the leadership team, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Karen Cadigan. I currently work in early childhood for Bloomington and Richfield Public Schools, in part because of my voice. Viruses are a hazard in working with preschoolers. I'd like to invite my colleagues, Karen and Al Eckler from MCEA, to come up with me.
Yes, they can help be your voice today. I can hear it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to start out by sharing Mr. Amoroso's enthusiasm and gratefulness for both the governor and certainly the commissioner and all the MDE staff's vision of having every four-year-old have access to high-quality education. Again, I think the devil is in the details of who we pay for, what we pay for, and who needs what. And in order to illuminate that a little bit, one of the things we wanted to share more detail about was about the existing school readiness programs across the state, those 276 districts that offer school readiness programs. And also to the question of how and to what extent are school districts asking for universal pre-K and ready to implement universal pre-K. And I'll start just by saying a little bit about the Bloomington School Readiness Program. I think that many of you perhaps have heard some details of this, but it's relevant to talk a little more about it today. We, in Bloomington, the school readiness, remember, is really a funding stream more than a program. It's around $200 per child in the district. For Bloomington, that equates to around not quite $300,000 a year. And with that money, we are charged by the statute to target the school readiness of 3- and 4-year-olds. In Bloomington, as it happens, our district and other grants we've written contribute an additional over $800,000 a year. So our school readiness program that right now serves about 340 at-risk 4-year-olds. Most of that is paid for not from state money. So, of course, we would love for more state resources to actually pay for that. I want to tell you a little bit about the results that program gets. It's a five-day-a-week, half-day program, 2.5 hours a day, with licensed teachers, 18 children, one teacher, and one highly qualified paraprofessional. And about 80% of those 4-year-olds are ready for kindergarten with that half-day program. What we have learned about the other 20% that are not yet ready, we've done some comparative data studies with Hennepin County. And what we've learned about those other 20% that seem to persistently not be ready, even if they're in our 3-year-old program and our 4-year-old program, is that we want to get upstream and support those families sooner, birth to 3, more with parent education. In other words, we want to have the flexibility to target our resources. So that's a down and dirty about the way Bloomington uses school readiness dollars, and I'm going to let my colleagues from other districts speak to their districts.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Loon, Senator Uyghur, and committee. My name is Al Ickler. I'm the Director of Community Education in Robbinsdale Area Schools, and my colleague covered much of what I would have spoken to, and I don't want to reiterate that. I think it's important that people understand the school readiness legislation, because sometimes I hear different things at different times. Karen mentioned that we use it for targeted children, but also others. The statute requires that we use school readiness dollars for targeted children, meaning free and reduced, EL, homeless, students with an IEP, or some other identified risk factor. So it is a targeted school-based approach for our highest need children. Additionally, the legislation allows us to open the program up for fees for parents that don't qualify under those categories and would like to participate. So this allows us to expand the program and have a really diverse and rich group of students and families involved. But the school readiness dollars, as she was pointing out, school readiness is a funding source for preschool programs, but school readiness dollars are used for those families. And as my colleague said, in Robbinsdale and across the state, we are also experiencing excellent pre and post results and very high levels of getting children ready for kindergarten. So we're very strong believers that there's value to the program and that part of that value is the legislation and how it targets our work. And part of it is the work around aligning pre-K through third grade, so that we are working aggressively with our early primary years to make sure that we don't have a learning loss, that we hand off our children, and that as we hand them off at a higher level of proficiency than in the past, they are able to take that child where they are and add rigor to what the work that they were doing in the past also. So I guess that's what I had for thoughts on top of Karen's.
Thank you.
Welcome. Hi, I'm Karen Schaub, and I'm here representing MCEA, Minnesota Community Education Association. You've had a lot of great conversation today, and I want to thank you for really caring about our youngest learners. I want to thank the governor and the commissioner for their hard work and the continuing to push this agenda, because it's really, really important to our young learners as they come. I think you've heard a lot about different options today. I guess what we're asking is for you to remember that school readiness does participate throughout the whole state. We can be a vehicle to help us get down the road farther in what we want to do with our pre-K. It is a spot for beginning and for us to continue to move. If the resources aren't there, that we cannot go to a universal four-year-old program. We're ready. We've made a lot of changes in the last couple years, and we're happy to take on that challenge. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cadigan, I had a question for you, and I want to hearken back to your previous life before, and I know that you were governor's, the head of the Office of Early Learning, and kind of when the whole scholarship movement was started and came to fruition in Minnesota. And I just wondered if you could offer any comments about, you know, what you see now from your role is to the efficacy of the scholarships, how that has worked to help. I know parents can certainly utilize scholarship dollars to go to school, basically school readiness programs and or other quality providers of choice. And how you see that, is that something that you consider a compliment or a competition to school readiness? Because we've heard a lot of testimony about options and that, and my perspective is that parental choice, especially when you're talking about such very young children, is a critical component of this. I think there's a lot of parents that may look at this and say, well, you know, an all-day program for my four-year-old just doesn't seem like something I would be comfortable with. Some parents need all-day daycare, in which case even a five-hour program such as the one the commissioner was talking about is certainly not going to cover their needs. They're going to have to go somewhere else for the other hours the parents at work. And so does that mean transition from a daycare or a daycare setting of some kind to then school and then back to another placement afterwards? That's a lot of transitions for a four-year-old. So I just wondered, you know, with all of your experience with kind of a variety of things we've talked about today, if you could offer some comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for asking. I certainly could offer some comments. And again, I think that in the big picture vision, the idea that the governor has of allowing access for all children and a mixed delivery system is spot on. In the implementation, I think there are two kind of major sticking points from what I've heard the conversation be this session, and one is about I think the developmental nature of four-year-olds, and another is about equity versus equality. So as to the developmental nature of four-year-olds, in a lot of the conversation about universal preschool, it sounds a bit like four-year-olds are just short six-year-olds, that they just know less. And that's simply not the case. Four-year-olds are qualitatively different than older children. That doesn't mean that they can't handle academic rigor when it's developmentally appropriate, because they absolutely can. But it does mean that they need flexibility. The developmental variation in four-year-olds is all over the board. There are some children that they're still learning how to regulate. They're still learning how to follow rules. There are still four-year-olds that nap, frankly. And families in Minnesota, I think, have made good, do their best to make accommodations for their work and school schedules so that they can maximize their own time with four-year-olds. So that, you know, the school readiness, both the school readiness programs and scholarships allow that kind of flexibility, both within communities and within families. And both, I think, are severely underfunded. With regard to the equity issue, I think that, you know, the idea of equality of in terms of achievement gap, I think the way that I've always understood it as a researcher and a policymaker and now back in a school district again is that what we're really interested in as a state is equality of outcomes, and that it takes different things to get different kids to different outcomes. And so I think that what I would suggest and what I've really heard from all over the state, school districts, child care providers, Head Start, is that equity is providing different things for different families. And since, you know, we have these terrific data. We're one of the only states that has collected statewide kindergarten readiness data for more than 10 years now. And I think at the last rating, about 60% of children were ready for kindergarten. And so the idea of using public resources to target children, to target for some children, or to spend all on one, to spend the same amount on different children is I think one of the decisions you have to make. And a final point about equity, I guess, is that in terms of the balanced mix of serving birth to three-year-olds, where you can really get traction in preventing achievement gaps from happening, versus the three- and four-year-olds, where we're closing gaps more likely, I think the current budget is something like $400 for every birth, at-risk birth to three-year-old, versus four or five, I don't know what the latest numbers are, $1,000 for every single four-year-old in the state. And so I think there's a choice around whether that's equitable or equal, and what do we want. I don't know if my colleagues have other things to.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your response. I think it was very thoughtful on the topic. Any questions for this panel of witnesses? All right. Thank you all very much. Very much appreciate your testimony. I think at this point, Senator Wieger, I wanted to I know we have talked about it just informally about the same and similar provisions in the bill. And I know with, when we did the walkthrough, there's a number of non-financial, so there's no cost implications, some policy things, and some of it's just policy language that either came from the department or things that are in both bills. And as I had mentioned to you, I would really like us to perhaps adopt some of those things to take a little bit of the burden off nonpartisan staff in the revisor's office when we do finally get to the point of putting together everything in the bill. But I mean, is that something you would be prepared to do if we could offer some motions on that list of things that we had discussed? Is that a possibility today?
Let's see, Madam Chair, I'd like to address that, but first, if I could just comment on the previous testimony, some reflections. The Senate spent 4 months developing our readiness proposal, and we were very proud of it because it was based on a proven, effective, flexible, high-quality program. And as you saw in some of the handouts, the results are clear in terms of students being ready for K. That is our state objective. Ready for K. And I believe in the World's Best Workforce report that we most recently had for districts, we're at about 70% or a little higher for the state. So we're making very good progress, and I think we need to continue to target that aid. I like the flexibility in this 24-year program. And at the same time, I commend the vision of the governor for the universal pre-K, and remind people, Jeb Bush in Florida, this was a constitutional amendment in 2002. You know, they were ready. And I know some of the legislators have grandchildren that go there, and it's accepted. We're not quite there, I believe, in the state. Part of it because of resources. But in terms of the vision and where we might go someday, I think the readiness model and other options we have in play will get us there. It's also important to look at the evaluations that are being done for various programs. And as we look at resources, the existing need for K-12 formula, et cetera, which this group is trying to give us direction. But I think that's the important part that we need to get and to make decisions. And scholarships are a part of that mix as well. And I'd just like to say that at this point.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I think, as I've commented to the commissioner as well, and we've had a lot of testimony on the House, both policy and finance committee, on early education and the various proposals as well. Representative Creech has been extremely involved in all of that, and Child Protection Task Force and that. So we've had a very broad as well as in-depth look into those things. And I think, as I have commented publicly frequently, I think our goals are the same, absolutely the same. Where we are spending a lot of time sort of back and forth on is the how. My suggestion, and that has always been, let's continue doing all the things that are working, because we've got a number of avenues that are working. School readiness programs, absolutely. Scholarship programs, absolutely. Head Start, ECFE. We have things that are working, and by offering, continuing to offering those good, high-quality options to parents, to families, again, we preserve that important element of parental choice. We are preserving and maintaining a focus on quality. And hopefully with some more money, we can make sure that we're reaching more of those children who absolutely need this. So, no disagreement on the goal whatsoever. And I think sometimes that's the hardest part about reaching consensus and legislating is what is our goal? Where are we trying to get? And I don't sense any sense of or any real disagreement with that. So I think the rest of us we can sort out and address. So I thank you very much for your comments on that. And I appreciate it. I think this has all been very helpful testimony and very thoughtful. And I appreciate that. And I want to especially thank the commissioner. And I hope she doesn't feel like any of this was directed at saying. This is a bad idea. It's more, here's some other great ideas, and let's all move together to a good goal in a way that we can all do that in our school districts as well. And I think they've offered some good suggestions. So thank you.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, on the second question for the same and similars, I want to thank the nonpartisan staff for identifying approximately 80 items, which should not be controversial. They're technical. There's a few items, though, that in that category that potentially could be, but for the most part, I think they're good. So why can't we adopt them now? If I would ask that we wait till we get our target, which should be very soon. I would assume within a couple of days for sure. And I want that as much as you do. I share your concern for staff. I'm told that it would make a minimal amount of times different in terms of time in adopting it now versus later. Most of these would be just a cut and paste and would go in the system and for the reviser, and I would assume they're probably already teed up once we do act on those. There are some items that are in the budget bill that are in the same and similars here. And so if I gave you that firm commitment that this will flow like the Red River in the spring, it will. And would
North?
Prefer, yes, would prefer that and not a flood. But that we could act as soon as we get the turn.
Well,
and you have my pledge for that.
Well, I hope so. Once we get the targets, there's no holding back. Yeah. At some point, that's we right. do need to be done. So
yes,
but I do actually. I'm going to ask our nonpartisan staff if they had any comment, or I guess I'm just wondering about timelines and time frames for putting this together. It is a significant. Both bills are of significant size, and so. Either Mr. Strom or if someone from the Senate wanted to comment, can you give us, because I know there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes once we finish our meetings and our committee meetings and that prepares these documents and gets us ready for the next phase. So, Mr. Strom, do you want to comment on kind of how much time this takes?
Madam Chair, committee members, I'll speak only for the House staff, and Senate staff can speak as well. Any provisions that are wrapped up or adopted make the life of assembling the bill somewhat easier. That said, we're fortunate this year that our bill is much smaller than some other committees' bills. We have about 250 pages, probably, of the completed document. In terms of turnaround time, a document like that can be turned around much faster than a document that's not in articles or a document that's 500 pages. But that said, anything the earlier we can get anything done from just a technical staff point of view, the better. But whether there's an advantage to doing it tonight or tomorrow may not matter so much, depending on the direction that this committee is given once its target is reached. the usual process is that after the target's announced, then there's some scheduling that's announced by the leadership that says we want this bill on the floor at a certain time, and that's when staff usually starts to tremble because that turnaround time really does matter and help. So anything that we can do ahead of time is appreciated, but we understand there are other concerns at work as well.
Yes, and I thank you for that, and I think you're being very diplomatic because I understand from, just inquiring that, sometimes it means, 48 hours or more with no sleep for staff, and it's a terrible position to put our staff in who work so hard and serve us so ably. So, and Senator Wieger and I, we get along well. We've had great conversations, and I do not want action on non-controversial items to be confrontational, but I would just plead that, if we could do something to help make the life of our staff a little easier and get some of these things adopted so they can get them plugged in and wait for us to get targets and finish the rest of our business, I think it would be a courtesy to them. So,
Madam Chair, I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Commissioner.
And a point of privilege, I've been told there's two teachers here who traveled to come here to speak to you today. I'm wondering if they could have an opportunity to speak with you today and just testify. They traveled across the state, and I'm wondering if you might give just a point of privilege and allow them to speak for quickly, give them a minute or two just to share.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think we'll finish up our discussion on this and then and with remaining time turn to that. So, Senator, any possibility? And I'll let you choose the items if you'd like.
No, Madam Chair, I said in good faith, we'll, as soon as we get the target, this will flow rather quickly, and I totally respect all staff. When I asked our Senate counsel, Anne-Marie Butler, who's been with us for 19 years, she had indicated, she has kid, child at home and all that too, but, it shouldn't make any difference. It's probably teed up in the system, and it will happen, and I would just like to continue, and perhaps we could post this so that people could see it, and we'll act on it as soon as we have that meeting after targets. I would just encourage members, on the Senate to abstain and to recognize we really don't need to make this a controversial item.
Representative Christian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just, Senator Wieger, and I respect that. I'm just wondering, it sounds like you said most of the items are very, very close. Would it be possible for you just, if we're going to post this, just to give us an indication or narrow down and say, here's the 6 or 10 that maybe we should talk about, so we just have the ability to get close and we can come and make this flow as quickly as you'd like? And I'm trying not to put you in a spot. I'm just trying to make it as efficient as possible.
No, Madam Chair and Representative Kreisha, I think all 80 are fine. I think there's 80 or so.
And I've looked at them, and they are fine. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Chair Wieger, if we post, then is that a signal to the revisor they can move in that direction? Or would you give us that kind of commitment so that they could start putting together the framework?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yes.
Thank you. All right, then. If that would help with
the equivalent of scout's honor.
Right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well, then, in the spirit of that, I do not want to put you or your members in an uncomfortable position of forcing a vote. That's not how I like to operate, and I don't think you do either. Mm-hmm. With the hope that, and I know we're all kind of just waiting together for from the what they call it, the white smoke or the announcement on high or something to come forward with targets, but that's so we can finish up our business. So and to our staff, again, our deepest appreciation for the many hours that you've put in to get us to this point. And I know it's probably not comparable to the ones that will lie ahead, but we do very much appreciate all of your fine work and your expertise. So
thank you.
All right, so with that, I understand there was a couple of teachers that traveled from a distance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Yes, and just please state your names for the record. Yeah. Thank you.
My name is Libby Erickson, and I have been a teacher for 31 years in the Alexandria School District. 18 of those years were spent in kindergarten. I'm currently on a leave from the district, and I'm here to testify in favor of the Governor Dayton's proposal for voluntary universal preschool. I know that you have heard lots of wonderful testimony on the value of preschool and the quality of early education and the significant that it impact that it has on preparing a child for school. It lowers retention and special education rates, and it increases graduation rates, and it helps to close that achievement gap. But I'm not here to tell you the national facts. I'm here to tell you how it impacted the children in my classroom and how it continues to impact the children in today's classrooms. As a kindergarten teacher, I can tell you, on day one, in my class, those children that attended preschool, and which ones have not, those that have attended preschool are ready for school. They have had opportunity to interact with their peers, with numbers, with letters, with colors, with paints, with books. They have had the opportunity to participate in developmentally appropriate curriculum, opportunities for plays, for singing, for whatever is at their level and meets their needs. With the push for getting kids reading earlier, the push down in academics, we have lost a huge part in the education of our children. Kindergarten is not what it used to be when I started teaching 31 years ago. You are missing a whole group of children who are not able to attend a preschool. We are missing them, and they are missing out on the opportunity and the benefit. These kids that come, these preschoolers that go to preschool, have a school sense. There's a great amount of time establishing routines and rules and procedures in the fall when kids come. If they have been to a preschool program, you don't need, as a classroom teacher, I don't need to spend a lot of time doing that. It's a reminder of my expectations. They easily adapt to new rules and new regulations and new routines. I can then take that time and spend and get to know my children, my students, and figure out how they learn individually, and I can start on their own individualized learning plan. These kids that go to preschool have an opportunity if they receive special education services, those services are then put into place in that preschool setting, where if they don't attend preschool, then sometimes through the special education process, it takes a half a year for some of those children to get the services that they need. They have wasted a half a year of their kindergarten life because they haven't gotten the services that they could have gotten had they attended a preschool program. They are able to adjust more easily to new situations. Students without preschool have a difficult time adjusting to routines. Many, it's their first time away from their mom or their dad, and we have criers. We spend a lot of time helping those kids adjust to kindergarten, where if they attend a preschool program, it's not as long as a kindergarten. With the proposal, it's a five-hour day. They can take that time to adjust. They don't know how to interact with peers if they've never been to a preschool program. We're finding more and more that they don't have opportunities for play, unorganized play. They have a lot of organized things, a lot of activities that their parents put them in, but in a preschool setting, they would have that opportunity to interact with peers of their own age and figure out how to play and how to get along with others. They also have kids that don't go to preschool have a difficult time listening to adults, sitting still, following directions. They are not ready to learn. I taught in a lower-income school that had many children without the opportunity for preschool. Many came from homes that had no stimulation, no parents working two jobs, and little time for interacting with their children. Many of these students did not have crayons, paper, pencils, books, or even someone to talk to them. Language, language, language. Preschool opportunities preschool offers the opportunity for these kids to develop their language. We're seeing more and more kids coming to school with little or no language. They need to develop that vocabulary in order to be successful in school. It always amazed me when I had kids that come to school and didn't know colors. Who is talking to these children? We need to get them. We need to have them in our preschools. A preschool opportunity is a great place for these children to be able to gain these experiences. Besides the lack of stimulation, many of these kids that are missing out on this preschool are left in unhealthy and unsafe home situations. Giving these students the opportunities for a safe and stimulating environment is invaluable. Everyone should have that opportunity for a preschool program. Being a teacher for 31 years, you want to make sure that your kids come to school ready to learn. This opportunity that the governor is proposing is an opportunity that will open doors for many children. We do not want to leave any child without that opportunity. We want those 47,000 children that don't have that opportunity for preschool to have that opportunity. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As you can tell, I'm passionate about kids and school.
Yes, it's very evident, and we very much appreciate that and your testimony. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sandra Santiago Pickett, and I should have been a statistic. I was born in one of the most underdeveloped and poverty-stricken neighborhoods in Chicago. I should have been a statistic. My mother was an immigrant from Puerto Rico with only a second-grade education. I should have been a statistic. I was raised in a single-parent home, and as a result of illness, my mother had to go on welfare. I should have been a statistic, but I was not. I began preschool at age 3. I began reading at age 4, and by 5 was reading fluently in a second grade level. By 6, I had taught myself to read in Spanish. I should have been a statistic, but I am not. I am now a 20-year veteran of early childhood education in urban areas. I am also a product of the preschool programs. How many other of my preschool classmates grew up to be productive members of society? How many present-day children will be able to grow up to be educators, physicians, and legislators? They need the opportunity that preschool will provide for them. They need exposure to early academic intervention and preparation. I work at Green Central, where there's almost a 97% free and reduced lunch. Families that live below the poverty level don't have opportunities or means to take children to activities that will enrich their lives. The struggle is real and it is daily. This doesn't mean that they don't love their children any less. It's just they're working two jobs. They can't. Preschool is there to help them. How they struggle with how to pay bills, how to put food on the table. The latest exhibit at the museum is not important. Preschool helps them in this area. Currently, with 97% free and reduced lunch, as a kindergarten teacher, 100% of my kindergartners are going to leave kindergarten reading. 3 of those did not go to preschool. Everybody else did. Of those 100% readers, 72% are also reading in a second language because I'm a dual immersion teacher. I credit this to preschool. The children come in ready. They are prepared, and we don't spend as much time in preparing them how to learn. They're ready to learn, and I credit this to preschool. Early childhood is a crucial stage of life in terms of a child's physical, intellectual, emotional, and social development. Growth of mental and physical abilities progress at an astounding rate, and a very high proportion of learning takes place from birth to age 6. This is a time when children particularly need high-quality personal care and learning experiences, and this is what Universal Preschool will provide for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much for your testimony. And Representative Peterson. Oh, ladies, you might want to stick around just in case we have questions. I'm sorry.
Well, we're always appreciative when teachers can come and provide their testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a question. We're all big supporters of preschool, but did you find a difference between universal preschool or were other preschool programs effective as well?
Whoever wants to take that one.
I think that if it is a quality program, that a preschool is a preschool is a preschool, and any opportunity that the kids can have to attend preschool and to a developmentally appropriate and quality preschool, I think that that's what is a benefit to the kids coming from a preschool into a kindergarten school.
Daycare isn't preschool. Preschool has, there's a methodology to preschool. There's pedagogy involved. Universal preschool does this.
Okay. Other questions? All right. With that, I thank you all. I think that's all we have for today, and we'll be waiting to hear for any further announcements on action. I think what I will do, though, just being always optimistic, I will recess the conference committee just in case anything is announced so we can come back. And then it's my understanding that if nothing happens and we're not called back, then by midnight we're obviously it adjourns and tomorrow goes back to Senator Weaker, and our hope will renew again for targets.
So. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And during our meeting, the higher ed target was set. Progress is being made, and we share your hope that we'll have good news soon. And so we'll stay tuned. We'll get the similars posted for people to see, and we're in discussions on a number of key points. It's been very helpful, the testimony, and we'll keep people posted by the internet in terms of when we'll be meeting next.
Very good. So with that, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if we're recessing versus adjourning, what type of timeline are you looking that, say we were to get a target and you wanted to convene it, are we looking at 15 minutes, an hour? What's your thoughts? Kind of tells me whether I go.
Yes, do you want to know if you can go home?
I have a couch. You're welcome to come
back. Yes. I mean, we would certainly, try to give members more than 15 minutes notice. And I'm cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of sitting around and waiting at this point. And
all right.
You're a Metro member as am I. And it's kind of nice to see your family once in a while. So, we'll try to give members, I would say we'd maybe try for an hour if that, is possible. And again, I don't have any particular information to indicate that we would be coming back tonight, but I just in the chance that something breaks here, I would want us to have the opportunity to come back and get back to work as quickly as possible. Okay. All right, so with that, Conference Committee is in recess. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stump.